I'm Karen Hartglass, and you're listening to It's All About Food. How are you today? I'm glad to be back. I missed last Tuesday because I was planning my big event, and I'll tell you about it one more time. I know I've talked about it quite a bit, but now that it's over, I want to tell you how great it was. So we had the Happy Birthday Review last week on Earth Day. Yes, it was my birthday, I know you know, and it was really a lovely, lovely celebration of all good things about food, even though I did get to share some not-so-nice stories about food. The bottom line is we have the answers for a healthy, delicious, sustainable world if we can all move towards eating plants that are grown free from toxic residues and pesticides and herbicides. But you know what? The answers are there. It's not rocket science. We have the answers, but the action, we all need to take action, and this is where you come in. We all need to do our part, and we all need to do something. And the first step I believe in is eating a plant-based diet, because not only is it nutritious and delicious, it's fun. It's easy. I think it's easy, and I try and help other people see how really easy it is when you stop resisting. And I'm part of the Food Revolution Summit this week, which is so empowering. It's also exhausting because it's 3 hours every day. I don't know how many of you are taking part in this, but if you go to responsibleeatingandliving.com and scroll down a bit to the Food Revolution Summit, it's going on April 25th to May 3rd, so we're halfway through. And there are three experts that are interviewed every day by John Robbins, and then his son, Ocean Robbins, gives some really lovely commentary and sums everything up. And I participate in giving the recipe and tip for the day, helping people along in their plant strong food journey. And I'm so inspired by this event because there are like 150,000 people that have signed up and are listening. And that is, isn't that inspiring to know that so many people are taking the time to learn? And in the forum for this event, I'm continually surprised and amazed, but also happy. I read all these people who are stunned to find out a lot of the things that we already know about, but they're stunned to find out what's going on with our food system, and they want to make a difference and help. So this is really exciting. We've been talking about genetically modified food and the politics of food and the exploitation of animals and people when it comes to food, and then, of course, nutrition. There are so many things that have been covered in such a short amount of time. So I want you to check that out when you have a chance. So let's bring on our first guest for today, shall we? Joshua Katcher, the discerning brute. He is an adjunct professor at Parsons, the New School for Design, and has taught sustainable fashion at the Laboratory Institute of Merchandising. He's currently writing his first book, Fashion and Animals, and has lectured on that topic at Princeton, the American University of Paris, Parsons, Brown, UPenn, and FIT, among others. Katcher started the men's ethical lifestyle website, The Discerning Brute, in 2008 and launched the Brave Gentleman label and e-commerce platform in 2010. Joshua, how are you today?
Hi. I'm great. Thank you so much for having me on the air.
You're very welcome. Well, people may not realize it. I talk about food all the time, and there's so many crazy things going on with food and exploitation and the poisoning of food and the poisoning of our planet and the cruelty to animals, and I'm out of breath listening all the horrible things that are going on with our food today.
I know.
But when we allow what's going on with our food system to occur and allow animals to be exploited, it's that much easier to allow the same exploitation to go on with our clothing.
You know, it is a parallel industry, and what a lot of people don't realize is that the fashion industry has global implications the same way that the food industry does.
Yep.
And the fashion industry has a very interesting way of being able to be perceived as benign or frivolous or harmless. We look at clothes, and we see it as just, you know, it's something fun to do. Go find a deal, pick out a nice outfit. But the thing that we don't see about fashion is that it is a global industrial complex where it affects millions and millions of workers, billions of animals, ecosystems everywhere. It's considered one of the top polluters in the world, and one of the top causes of waste when it comes to textile waste. And when you look at and when you combine the issues that affect workers, the issues that affect animals, and the issues that affect the environment, you're talking about a really serious, serious industry.
Yes. Oh, so what do we do about it, Joshua? Are you here to save the day?
Well, I would like to. That would be fun.
Yeah, put on a cape.
Yeah.
A fashionable cape.
An ethically made cape. You know, there's a lot of small independent designers that are popping up everywhere that are really going against the grain, and they're pushing back against this fast fashion system. And when I say fast fashion, it's similar to how we look at fast food. It's a very similar concept. It's, you know, really cheap, high volume production to make the greatest amount of profit for the industry, and the minimal amount of expense and considerations provided to those that are wrapped up in the production process. And just the other day was a new holiday that we started celebrating just a couple of years ago called Fashion Revolution Day. And this year, Fashion Revolution Day asked everyone to consider the question, who made my clothes?
Mm.
And that's a really important question to ask. And I like to contribute to that and say it's equally important to say, of whom are my clothes made, in addition to who made my clothes. So animals are turned into fashion objects, and they're hidden behind this industry where we don't see how they're processed. And if we do see how they're processed, most people, it goes against the values that all of us already share.
It's a very interesting world we live in, and I know that many of us fall into this lifestyle where we want a deal, we want a bargain, and it's so tempting because you can walk into just about any store, everything's on sale, and there are some things that are incredibly inexpensive, and you want it. It looks good.
Yeah. And that's the dangerous thing about fashion is it's similar to food where, you know, we want it, it tastes good, and we don't want to think about how it's made. And that's what I call aesthetic irrationality, where because something is pretty or because something is yummy, that makes it a good and not a bad, even though the way that it's made might be considered a bad. But that's hidden under layers of marketing and very expensive advertising, and that's the thing that the manufacturers don't want you to think about. So they create fantasies for us to believe, and those fantasies are the fashion ads we see and the runway shows and all of the glitter and glamour that surrounds the fashion industry. And the parallel to that is what we see happening in the food industry with Happy Meat and organic meat and all of these attempts to greenwash and whitewash things that would otherwise be seen as horrible.
All right, so let's just talk about people for a moment. Let's get to the animal story in a moment. But we hear occasionally about some nightmare that occurs in a non-Western country where people are locked in a building or crammed in a building, and they're treated really poorly. They're paid next to nothing, and they're just like slave labor. And then some disaster happens. There's a fire. Everybody dies, or they can't get out. But these things are going on all the time today. It's not a random experience. A lot of our clothing today is made by, like, serfs, feudal labor.
It is. And the problem isn't getting better. It's getting worse.
Yeah.
And that's what a lot of people don't realize, that we think that sweatshops was a big issue in the 90s and we somehow worked it out. No. What's happening is the companies are being much more quick with their responses about let's say that we are addressing these issues, let's say that we're making our policies more safe for workers and that we're going to have more oversight, and But really, it's just happening more and more frequently. And if anybody watches John Oliver on HBO, I think it was either last night or the night before, he did a whole segment on this very issue. And it's really, you know, he uses comedy to address this. And if you just Google, you know, John Oliver sweatshop, it'll pop up. And it's really worth watching, because what he does is he shows the history of how frequently this happens, that there's a tragedy in a factory, a bunch of people die, or they discover that it's a bunch of 12-year-olds working 14-hour days and being paid nothing, and they can't even buy the equivalent of a meal for their family with a day's salary. It is slavery. It isn't like slavery.
No, it is.
And this is not getting better. So this has a lot to do with our desire for cheap clothes, our desire and our entitlement to feeling like we deserve a $10 T-shirt. It seems that we're willing to pay a little bit more for organic food now, and we should be willing to pay a little bit more for fair labor and fashion, and also for ethically made fashion that doesn't use and harm animals. Animals are even more exploited in the fashion industry than laborers are, because the laborers can at least attempt to organize. They can at least talk to each other and try to fight for their rights and protest, and they often get crushed in their protests, but at least they are able to do that. The animals aren't even considered valid beings. They're just seen as units of production. So their needs are very, very rarely met. And who speaks on behalf of them? If we let the industry speak on behalf of the animals, of course they're going to tell us that the conditions are fine and they're happy and that they're well taken care of, and it's just a haircut. That's what we always hear from the wool industry. It's just a haircut.
Oh, God. I remember when I first read about wool production, I got some little book, and it's horrifying to read what goes on to sheep for their wool.
Oh, it is something that most people don't think about and had no idea about. And it's something that the sustainable fashion industry likes to claim is sustainable, that wool is this product that is it's considered biodegradable and natural, and we hear all these lovely keywords, and then we look at the actual numbers, and we look at how the sheep, the livestock themselves, impact the environment. We know that livestock is the number one cause of the worst environmental problems. That means sheep. There's a billion sheep on the planet. A billion.
Mm-hmm.
That's one for roughly every six people. And when you consider the amount of resources that need to go into raising that number of sheep, the amount of land used, the amount of drinking water, the amount of chemicals used to process the wool, and it's a high-volume, high-turnover industry where the shearers are expected, they're paid by volume, many of them in America and in Australia. And so these are prey animals. Sheep are prey animals, and they don't like to be pinned down, so they resist and they fight. And in undercover investigations, you can see these undercover investigations if you just search wool expose or wool investigation. They resist. They don't want to be pinned down. And then these workers who have to shear 1,000 sheep a day get frustrated, and they end up beating these animals over the head with their shear blades, and they get cut, and it's a nightmare.
Yes.
And it isn't just a friendly haircut, and it's terrible for the environment. So that's a big problem with wool, yeah.
And then I've read how destructive they are on the terrain, specifically in Australia, and then when the animals are spent, just like in the food industry, then they're like shipped over to the Middle East to be slaughtered as meat.
Yeah. So when you look at the area of the world, New Zealand and Australia, which is one of the leaders in the production of wool, their number one source of greenhouse gas emissions is sheep.
Wow.
And the industry really doesn't want people to know about that. And they just in the last several months have paid for studies to try to show that wool is eco-friendly, because it didn't get very positive results when they had their life cycle analysis, their life cycle assessment looked at. so they're doing a little bit of backpedaling and trying to figure out how to repackage wool as environmentally friendly again, because it's not. But if you look at the hair by itself, detached from the animal, then yes, it's a great product. But can we have wool without the animal? And that's a question that we're actually asking right now, that science is asking, and that we're able to answer. And the answer is soon, yes, we will be able to have wool and fur, and we already have leather without the animal attached. And there's a lot of really exciting things happening in the realm of biotechnology that is going to enable us to remove animals from the production equation.
Well, I have to say that I never thought about the greenhouse gas emissions from sheep, so thank you for bringing that up. It was just
sure.
I never connected the dots. That's genius. And just one more thing to be upset about.
But regarding your question about the point about the land, yeah, land erosion from sheep grazing is a big problem. And what they tried to do for a while was confine the sheep in the same way that they do to pigs on these high confinement gestation crate style operations. So they tested that out and it didn't work out very well, and so they stopped doing that. But they realize it's a problem. And whenever there's a lot of money at stake, you're going to see the industries doing anything and everything they can to find a different way to make it work, or to, or just to greenwash and deny until they absolutely can't anymore.
This greenwashing is really important to pay attention to. So people may not realize there are companies that want to appear that they're with it and doing good things for the environment, and they make all kinds of claims, and some of them are misleading, some of them are false, and they appear green, but they're really, really not.
Yeah, that's it's a really big problem, and it's confusing, and it's really disheartening for citizens to have to try to decipher whether a business is being honest or not. And the lesson that we learn again and again is that if an industry claims that it's environmentally friendly, you should be suspicious, and you should look into it and find out, are they really environmentally friendly? Are they really ethical? And what is at stake for them? Why are they making this claim? Those are really important questions to ask, because if an industry that's a traditional industry that or a huge corporation, oftentimes it's just marketing.
Now, let's talk about sustainable fashion. So is there a sustainable fashion organization or certification? What does that all mean?
The concept of sustainable fashion in itself is not regulated per se. There are regulations that exist in different countries regarding whether you can label something organic or whether you can label something, made in a certain country. But no, it's a deregulated concept, and it's really up to the companies to proclaim for themselves whether they are ethical, whether they are sustainable. Under the sustainable fashion umbrella, you have all these different concerns, the labor concerns. So a company that takes pride in being all made in the U.S. or all made under fair labor conditions could be considered, you know, under the umbrella of sustainable fashion, or a company that has all organic plant-based fibers like linen or organic cotton or recycled cotton, any sort of recycled material, those are under the umbrella of sustainable fashion. But it really, there's no oversight. And one of the reasons for this lack of oversight is because, like most people think, the politicians don't see fashion as being an important thing. And that first point that I made, that fashion is seen as a frivolous thing, that permeates every area of our society, that the people in power also see fashion as a very frivolous thing. The people who don't see fashion as a frivolous thing are the people who are making a ton of money, and some of the world's most wealthy people are the heads of these fast fashion companies. The head of Zara is, I think, the fourth wealthiest person in the world.
Huh.
And Zara is a fast fashion company, like H&M, like Forever 21. These companies where you can go in and buy a $5 t-shirt, and then it falls apart, and then you go and you buy 10 more, you know, within a week. These companies are making a killing, and that pun is intended.
Yeah. I'm sure politicians know about them because they know where the money is, and they want to support the folks that are going to give them big campaign contributions.
Right.
Yeah.
But
anyway.
The fashion, one of the fashion editors at the New York Times made a really interesting point when she said that that sometimes people she interviews say, I never think about fashion. Mm-hmm. And she responded by saying, you know, this is something that you should think about because it isn't just about your clothing choices. It's about manipulating people into how they perceive you. So there's this whole other side of fashion where it isn't just about the physicality, the materiality of it. It's also about the sociology of fashion, the symbolism, and the power that can be gained through appearing a certain way and through utilizing fashion to become who you want to be perceived as. And that makes it an even more complicated topic.
Absolutely. And that's what makes marketing so evil. You know, they are screwing up the minds of so many young people, and so many young women today have all kinds of image issues, and it's spilling over to the young men. And, you know, you're not fat enough, you're not thin enough, you're not, your butt's not big enough or small enough or whatever, and it's a problem.
It is. We were just talking about that in my class this morning. I teach at Parsons, as you said, and we have a whole section in my fashion class about height and the issues of creating unachievable standards through advertising and marketing, where even the models that they hire, you never see the real model. These models are retouched in Photoshop, and they're made to be perfect. And there is no such thing as a perfect human being. Human beings come in all shapes and sizes and all colors, and you don't often see people who see themselves reflected in the fashion industry. And we've seen a lot more recently with curvier models, with models of more diversity on the runway, and with even models that are, in wheelchairs it's been much more inclusive. But there's still so much to be gained and so much more to do in that realm.
Now, women have a much greater variety and selection of clothing, especially when it comes to cruelty-free options, things that don't use animal products, no wool, no silk, no leather. Men have more of a challenge.
Yes. Well,
where does a discerning brute go to look fashionable?
Men have a twofold challenge because most mainstream men are a little bit, I mean, it's been better in recent years, but shopping for fashion is perceived as a feminine thing. And we live in a sort of macho culture, a patriarchal culture, and guys don't really want to identify as fashion consumers. So a lot of them claim to just not be interested in fashion, but we all participate in fashion. If you close your eyes and pick up a t-shirt off your floor and you pick up a pair of jeans, you know, that you've worn every day for a month and put them on, you're still making a fashion decision and you're still participating in the fashion system. It's inescapable. Even if you're a nudist, you're still making a fashion
decision. It's a choice,
guys have a problem. There isn't very much offered by way of menswear that is ethically made. And that's why I started the Discerning Brood in 2008, to address that void and to start addressing men in a similar way that GQ or Esquire or Details magazine appeals to men. I wanted to appeal to men in this way, but also make them feel comfortable about talking about issues that we care about, that it's okay for to talk about sustainable menswear, and it's okay to talk about ethical menswear and to be a hero and a protector and a defender of workers and animals and the environment, that this can be a masculine thing. And I wanted to create that space and hope that men who were looking for fashion would find the discerning brood and be turned on to issues that they wouldn't have sought out otherwise.
Well, I think more men are getting into fashion these days. There's all kinds of things that have been going on in the entertainment world that spill over into everyday life. More men wearing creams and lotions and makeups and hair products. And the fashion seems to be getting a little more interesting and adventurous for men, which is nice. But I have some questions that I don't know if you have the answers for them, but you can find, for example, for a man who wears suits, either occasionally or regularly, you can find summer suits, cottons, and linens that are quite lovely. But when it comes to winter time, and you need a suit to wear. I mean, for example, we went to a funeral a month ago, and we didn't even know it, but it was outdoors, and we froze. And my partner Gary was in a suit, and it was a thin suit because he doesn't have a heavy winter vegan suit.
Yeah. Well, my brand, Brave Gentleman, we make those. And I think we're the only brand on planet Earth that specifically makes autumn, winter, vegan, sustainable, fairly made men's suits.
And what are they made out of?
We use a variety of materials, and one of the most exciting materials that we're using right now is a blend of recycled cotton, recycled poly, and it has a beautiful wool-like hand feel, and it's a gorgeous tweed. And actually, in the factory that I work with in New York City right now, I'm working on a new collection that's going to be ready in probably about a month for this coming autumn-winter season. And it's really impressive, the textile technology that we're looking at right now, the technology to recycle fibers that would otherwise have ended up in the landfill, or to engineer plant-based, biodegradable bioplastics, polyesters that are made from recycled soda bottles and water bottles, or any number of new technologies. The exciting thing about technology is it's always getting more refined, it's always getting greener, and it's always getting more efficient. And when you compare that to an animal model, like having animals on a farm, that really can't change that much. There's only so much you can do to modify a living being. You can confine them, you can modify what you're feeding them, but ultimately, the industries that rely on animal bodies to produce fibers are really inefficient, and it's just bad design. When you look at it from a design standpoint, it's incredibly energy inefficient, it's incredibly slow, and it's really messy. And these new textile technologies, I like to call the material that I use future wool. We have future wool and future leather and future fur, and we have all of these materials that are superior to their animal-based counterparts. But we're up against industries that are very well funded that don't want to be competed with, like any other industry. So I hope that my suits and my boots collaboration that I have with Novaca, that these looks get out there, and not just to people looking for a vegan suit, but it should appeal to anybody who likes good menswear.
Well, what seems to succeed in our capitalistic society is an idea that attracts investors who think they're going to get a good return on their money. So we have companies like Hampton Creek Foods that are replacing chickens to make eggs with plant-based eggs, and we have Beyond Beef where they're replacing the animal to make plant-based meats, and investors are really excited about this. So you need to come up with a product that investors will want to invest in.
We're working on it.
I bet you are. Now, I heard about a fabric made from the green leaves from pineapple plants.
Yes.
That was exciting.
It's called Pinyatex. And the woman who spearheaded Pinyatex, she used to be a leather industry executive, and she realized that leather was incredibly harmful to the environment. The tanning process is completely toxic. But even before you get to the tanning process, you're already starting with the industry that is the number one cause of the worst environmental problems. So
yeah.
You can't have sustainable leather. You can't have vegetable tanned leather, as they like to call it, and this greenwashed version of leather, because the tanning process is just, you know, piling on even more harmful effects to an already problematic livestock-based industry. And when we think about leather, we can't think byproduct. We have to think co-product, because looking at leather as a byproduct is really damaging to the idea that, you know, when they tell us, oh, we're just making use of something that would otherwise be thrown away, this is not at all the truth. If it wasn't for the leather industry, a lot of these companies would go out of business. They rely on the money that they make from leather as one of their primary economic investments. So without leather, these industries wouldn't be able to, you know, make their ends meet.
Okay, I have one more question about some of these synthetic materials.
Yeah.
A lot of times when I buy something that's polyester, there's a lot of static cling. Are some of the newer ones solving that problem?
Solving the problem of static cling?
Yes.
I don't, you know, that's not something I've looked into, but I
put it on your list, Joshua.
I'll put it on the list. Solving static cling. I think if we just demagnetize the Earth, we'll be okay.
Oh, okay. Well, that might lead to some other problems.
I'm just kidding.
Well, Joshua, it was great talking to you today, and there's a lot more that I think I need to learn from you, so we'll have to pick up this conversation another time.
Thank
we're
you
out of
so
time.
Much for having me, and if anybody wants to find out more about these topics, go to thediscerningbrute.com or bravegentleman.com.
TheDiscerningBrute.com or BraveGentleMan.com, which you are, Joshua Katcher. Thanks for joining me again. Take care.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye. All right, let's take a quick break, and we'll be back to talk about vitamins. Okay, everybody, we're back. I'm Karen Hartglass, and this is the second part of It's All About Food. And before I bring on my next guest, I wanted to just sum up a little bit more about our recent fundraising event, the Happy Earth Day Review. We had some really great sponsors at this event, and one I wanted to bring up is Vote Couture, which is a vegan fashion company, and they offered a vegan version of wool for this lovely little felt pencil skirt. It was really adorable, and we had one of those to give away in one of our silent auction boxes. And the Catskill Animal Sanctuary, which is really a lovely, lovely sanctuary, they offered a stay in their homestead, which is a lovely bed and breakfast. And if you ever want to get a gift for someone, this is like a great gift because they get to go and stay in a beautiful place in a lovely atmosphere. And then if you want to, for them to learn a little bit more about what's going on with animals, then they can just take a little trip over to Farm Sanctuary. And in a loving, non-judgmental, beautiful way, they can learn about some of the terrible things that are going on in the world. And it might just change their lives. And we had some really wonderful things in our gift bag, including coupons for Tofurky and Gardein, all these meat-based, plant-based meat alternatives. Maywa gave some of their product. They were really very generous. They make all kinds of vegetarian meats. You can find them at maywanyc.com, and you don't have to live in New York City to take advantage of them. They ship all over the place. But one of the other goodies that we had in our gift bag was something called Alternative Eats, and we're going to learn a little bit more about them right now because I have Haley Rich on with us, who's the founder and CEO of Alternative Eat, the first quick dissolving multivitamin for adults who can't swallow pills. And after the success of Alternative Eats for adults, Haley launched Alternative Eats Kids, the all-natural alternative to sugary gummy vitamins that stick to kids' teeth. And she recently lobbied on Capitol Hill with the Natural Products Association and has a new book coming out in 2016 called Should I Scoop Out My Bagel. Welcome to It's All About Food, Haley.
Hi, thanks so much, Karen. How are you?
Good. I was really excited when I found your product, Alternative Eats.
Thanks. We're so excited to be found by you.
Yeah, well, I don't have a personal problem swallowing vitamins, and when I went through a romp with advanced ovarian cancer 8 years ago, one of the things that I did was take lots of nutraceuticals, and I was taking tons of pills every day, and thank goodness I could swallow them. But a lot of them, if I could, I opened them up and put them in a smoothie because that made it a lot easier.
Yeah, that's one of the things with our vitamins. It's actually a powder, so you can pour it on your mouth and take it like you would a pixie stick when you were younger, or you can also mix it into anything you want, so smoothies, puddings, applesauce, cereals, anything but obviously that doesn't involve heat because that would ruin the integrity of the nutrients. So it is something for people who can't swallow pills or just something who are looking for an easier or more inclusive ways of not having to pop more pills throughout their day.
And I'm surprised that there really aren't any others out there for a multivitamin.
Yeah, you know, there really aren't that many. I mean, there are some gummies out there, which, as you know, contain gelatin, so they're not a great, most of them do anyway, not a great source for vegetarians or vegans. But, you know, a lot of the non-pill alternatives out there actually have some drawbacks to them. And when I set out to develop Alternivites, I thought it was really important to kind of take all the positives and leave out all the negatives. So when it comes to, you know, animal products and byproducts, artificial sweeteners, you know, lots of sugar in there, lots of those different types of things, you know, that really prevent people from taking vitamins. I feel that the more people we can bring back into the category, the better, and that's something I hope that we accomplish with our vitamins.
Okay, so first I was pronouncing it wrong. It's
Alternivite. Everyone pronounces it wrong and my name wrong. I'm well used to it.
And how is your name pronounced?
Hallie.
Okay, I got that right.
Yes.
Or did I say Haley?
No, I think you said Hallie.
Oh, my goodness. You say Haley, and I say Hallie.
Yeah, exactly. I get it all. As long as you're pointing in my direction, you got my attention.
Good. Now, there are all kinds of crazy ingredients that you can find in vitamins, like GMO-based corn starches and things that people don't even think about. And then we've heard most recently, some scary things about different vitamin suppliers where you're not even getting the product you think you're getting, and you might be getting something toxic or horrible.
Well, I guess let me address those two separately. When it comes to GMOs, I agree, but I think that's not a problem that's only inherent to vitamins. Unfortunately, you don't know of most of what you're taking because of the label laws, you know, what's from GMO and not what's not. We're very proud that our vitamins have no GMO ingredients in them, and we label it appropriately so that people who, you know, are looking for non-GMO products know that ours, you know, fulfills that requirement. And for people who, you know, aren't too concerned with GMOs at this point, then, you know, it's neither here nor there for them. In terms of the recent studies that came out, some of the testing methods were a bit questionable. Now, I agree with you completely that if there are any supplements on the market that don't have what they state to have, then they should absolutely be off the market. But that would be illegal. So, you know, it's not that that's common practice in the industry at all. A lot of, you know, one of the, and I don't make herbal supplements, so I am definitely not an authority on that side of the business. But an example that was told to me was that if you took the coffee that you buy at a regular coffee shop and took that to a research, you know, lab and had them test it for coffee, that they would actually not be able to find any DNA of coffee in it because it's an extract. And the same goes with some herbal supplements that are made from extracts. So while you're looking for the DNA of it, you know, it's kind of ruined in the process because you're dealing with something different. You know, it's a part of it, just not the whole. So I thought that was a really, you know, interesting explanation of kind of the science behind the testing. And the FDA itself said that alone they wouldn't use this DNA, you know, barcoding method in isolation for these things. So I just think it's important to look at it through the right lens and to say, if these are wrong, absolutely get them off the market, but let's just use the right testing to go after it.
Okay. Now, do you have a personal story why you started this company?
I do, actually. I am the third generation in my family to be in the vitamin industry, but up until I started my own company, I actually never took vitamins. Believe it or not, I can't swallow pills, as you mentioned earlier. So I was kind of like the pillmaker's daughter who couldn't take pills, or the modern-day shoemaker's daughter who didn't have shoes. So I kind of set out to create this delivery form for people who can't swallow pills or who don't want to, because I, you know, passionately believe in the power of proper supplementation, but I'll tell you one time vitamins definitely won't work is when you don't take them. So, you know, I tried to answer my own need and found that there were, you know, millions of Americans who are just like me who were looking for non-pill supplement alternatives.
Okay, now, are there some things that have to be in a pill that can't be loose in a powder?
I guess with my invention, I would say nothing has to be anything. But there are, you know, there are restrictions for what some things can come in. And, you know, a lot of it has to do with taste. Because basically, you know, what I did with my vitamins is it's kind of like eating the cookie dough before the cookie. Mm-hmm. You know, you just take the recipe and you just don't put it into the oven to make it. So, you know, it's not that it's so different. It's just we're using some coated vitamins so it doesn't, you know, inherently taste bad on your tongue, because anyone who's ever taken half a pill or, you know, kind of burped up a regular, you know, pill or capsule knows that those things don't generally taste so good. But, you know, a lot of things more have to do with taste and have to do with kind of the form that it comes in.
Hmm. Okay. And then when I get vitamin C, for example, I like to get the powdered version, and I just scoop out a quarter teaspoon or something because I like the most inexpensive version and controlling it myself. Mm-hmm. Is that possible with multivitamins to have, you know, a big loose container of powder that you just scoop out, or do they have to be in individual doses, or that's probably the way most people like them?
Most people do like them in individual doses just because it's pre-measured. They don't have to worry about, am I really getting, is it a heaping teaspoon? Is it a regular teaspoon?
Mm-hmm.
Where am I, you know, curling it off? So especially when it comes with something like a supplement or even, you know, if there was ever an OTC pop, most people want them pre-measured. But, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you could take the packets, open them up, and do anything you want with them.
That's good. Now, I'm looking at your Alternivites website, and there's, like, so many things that are not in your vitamins.
Yeah, we're proud for our vitamins just as much of what we do have as just as much what we don't. You know, we don't have any GMOs, as you mentioned. We're sugar-free. We're gluten-free. There's no animal products or animal byproducts. There's no high-fructose corn syrup or aspartame. We're certified kosher. So, you know, we're really proud of doing this in what we find to be, you know, a very clean way of making a vitamin. We don't have any of those artificial fillers and binders and sweeteners and preservatives and colors and dyes, and, you know, the list can go on and on about what some of the other vitamins have out there. So we're very proud of, like you said, not only the vitamins, minerals, and antioxidants that we do have, but all of that long laundry list of stuff that we don't.
Now, are you planning more different types of multivitamins? You know, we live in a world where we can't have enough choice. There's like a gazillion different versions of so many different things. But a lot of vitamin manufacturers today, they have a man's formula, a woman's formula, a child's formula, and then a formula with extra this and that for people that want it. And I'm even thinking about, I don't know if you're familiar with Dr. Joel Fuhrman, who has his line of vitamins.
Mm-hmm.
But he always tells us to stay away from adding certain vitamins in the multivitamin. And, you know, so I wonder if you're considering any of those things for other variations.
Right now, our multivitamin is staying as is. Later this summer, we'll be introducing a vitamin C product, a vitamin D product, and a calcium product as standalone items. But as far as multis, we're really happy with our product as it is now. And in the immediate future, we have no plans for, you know, targeted multivitamin formulas. That's something that as the research continues, you know, that we'll just keep taking a look at.
Okay. Really good. So what happened when you went to Capitol Hill?
It was really interesting to kind of, you know, walk into those offices of our senators and our congressmen and meet with their aides. It was really refreshing. You hear so many bad things about politics and politicians, and I must say the aides of, I mean, I am from New York, so I met with the aides of some New York senators and congressmen. They were very engaged, you know, very into healthy living and being proactive about their constituents' health, and it was really interesting explaining to them where we are with the industry, where we want to take the industry, and it was really, I would say, a welcome surprise to see the interaction between us, and it was a wonderful experience.
Hmm. Oh, that is nice for a change to hear something good about our government. I'm just finding your upcoming book title hysterical.
Thank you.
Because I know so many people who have scooped out their bagels. what's it about?
So a dear friend and colleague of mine is a registered dietitian, and we were speaking one day at, over work about how we constantly are being asked the same questions over and over again by colleagues, by friends, by complete strangers who find out once I'm in the vitamin industry and she's, in the nutrition business, and how even with the wealth of information out there at our fingertips, it's so contradictory and you just don't know what to believe and who has what agenda. And so we decided to kind of take our top 100 questions that were always asked and write a book and make a Q&A. And, it's very tongue-in-cheek and very witty, and it's not preachy at all, but we just kind of lay out the facts, and we want people to realize that life is fun and it's meant to be enjoyed, but there's a healthy way and a moderate way to do everything, and that's really our approach to the book.
Do you eat bagels?
I do eat bagels, and I love bagels, but I do scoop my bagel.
You are a bagel scooper.
I am a scooper.
That's funny. I rarely eat bagels these days. I do love them, though, but I just avoid them. I'm part of the Food Revolution Summit this week, which is being put on by John and Ocean Robbins. It's an all-week-long, exhausting summit all about food, and they're experts on every day. It's 3 hours a day. And today they were talking about Flintstone vitamins, as a matter of fact, and how horrible they are.
Yeah, there's a lot of bad information out there about some of what Flintstones does and doesn't have. But, I don't like to speak bad about my competition. And I'd just like to say I think ours are better. How about that?
Yes. Well, okay. So, I just want to mention that, they have artificial colors and aspartame and gluten and things that you think are safe for children, but a lot of children react really negatively to these artificial things that we consider okay to put in our bodies.
Right. I like to say, without knocking anybody, there was a time for vitamins from the Stone Age, but that time has passed.
That's good.
Thank you.
That's really good. Now, your vitamins are manufactured here in the United States?
Yes, we're actually manufactured right here in New York. We are manufactured, packaged, distributed, and headquartered in New York.
Very nice. I love to hear that.
Yes, as do we. Like to keep things close to home.
Yeah, very good. Well, I want to really thank you for being a part of my fundraiser last week by offering all of our attendees samples of your Alternavites. That was a really nice little unusual treat to have in our gift bags.
Well, thanks for letting us be a part of it. We like to think that we're a company with a conscience, and it's nice to partner with people who feel the same way.
Yeah, we do. So thank you. And I do know some people close to me that can't swallow vitamins, so I'm definitely going to let them know about this.
Fabulous. Thank you so much.
Okay. Well, thank you for joining me on It's All About Food. It's All About Vitamins.
Have a great day. Thanks so much.
You're welcome. That was Hallie Rich, and the website is Alternavites, A-L-T-E-R-N-A-V, like Victor, like vitamin, I-T-E-S. com. You can find out more about that if you have a hard time swallowing vitamins or know someone who does. So we just have a few minutes left, right? And that was funny. We just have a few minutes left, right? Okay. I amuse myself all the time. So I've mentioned a number of times this Food Revolution Summit, and we've listened to people this week like Michael Pollan and Eric Schlosser, and today we listened to Raj Patel. It's really been a very inspiring thing to be knowing that hundreds of thousands of people are listening at the same time you are, or at least will be within the day or so, and want this information. There's something about the power of numbers. But like I mentioned at the beginning of the program, I'm thrilled that people want this information. And it's great to hear these food expert leaders talking. But It won't go anywhere if it's just talk and listening. We have to act, and the real action, the real work, happens from you and me. It doesn't happen from these celebrity, well-known, best-selling book author people. It happens from all of us making a difference. So we do whatever we can, right? We eat plant foods. We try and get to know our local farmers. You know, a lot of us who are vegan and vegetarian or plant-strong kind of people, we're horrified about what's going on with our non-human animal friends that we share this planet with, but horrible things are happening to humans, too, who make our food. And like we were talking about earlier with Joshua and the fashion, when you're wearing a piece of clothing or when you're eating a piece of food, do you take the time to think, how did this get here? And what were all the things that happened along the way? And unfortunately, with our food, with our fashion, there's a lot of exploitation in every step. And the only way that we can change that is really being aware, not supporting the businesses and brands that we know are not doing nice things. Sometimes that means we have to go without. You may not be able to buy that cheap T-shirt if you realize whose hands touched it and what they had to go through to get that into a store near you. And money speaks louder than anything else. We just can't support these things. So I'm excited to know that there are people out there doing their part, creating products that we can believe in, that we can support, and then we do the rest. Now, I was talking to Jane Velez Mitchell a couple of weeks ago, and I'm really excited to hear that people have been responding to some of the things she said and are contacting their local politicians about some of the things she spoke about, all kinds of horrible animal testing and things going on. And we all need to do that. And it's hard. I know. We're all busy. We're all involved in our own lives. But we each have to do something. So this is my call after Earth Day last week. And, you know, we can come up with a different excuse every day why we need to do more. And I just hope I can inspire you a little bit to speak louder. And that may just mean inviting people over and making them delicious, healthy food and letting them know. You know, I do this all the time, and I know that some of the people that I socialize with are just never going to get it. But there's always hope that one day they will, and they will. It just takes time. So we just have to be joyful about it and generous and stay on the path. That's my message. Stay on the path. Yes. I wanted to mention also Go Organic NYC. I think I mentioned them before. They were another sponsor for our event, and I'm so grateful for them, not just because they donated some gift certificates for my event, but they have made it a lot easier for me, especially in this last week when I have been extremely busy, busier than ever before, if that's possible, because they deliver. I was able to get my kale and my collards and have healthy food to eat, and they do it really reasonably. So if you're in the New York metro area, I really, recommend checking out Go Organic NYC. And for any of you that are involved with the Engine 2 diet, Rip Esselstyn's book and Engine 2, they have a website, engine2extra.com. I'll be there tonight in their chat. I don't know what it's called, but they have some kind of chat room on the engine2extra.com site, and I'll be there chatting away at 9 p.m. Eastern time tonight. So join me there. That'll be fun. And that's all for now. Have a delicious week.